bhakti. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yashami. Devotional service, surrendering unto Krishna, the connection with Krishna can destroy sin. And another distinction is that sin affects the body and the mind, whereas offenses go more deeply. One can say they touch the soul or the heart of the living entity. It creates a certain nature towards God and towards godly persons or activities. So it's more serious. There's a similarity. There's a number of similarities, but one of them, Jiva Goswami points out, they carry over from lifetime to lifetime. So when takes birth, part of the package is carry over sinful reactions and carry over offensive impressions. And we'll hear some more about that in part three. Very interesting comments by Jiva Goswami. So now, propensities continuing after one lifetime. This is Daksha with the goat's head, who offended Lord Shiva, who was forgiven for the offense, but although forgiven for the offense, the propensity, so the reaction to the offense was neutralized, but the tendency wasn't. And so he did it again in his next life. We're almost done with our review. We discussed this point of again distinguishing between sin and offense being far more grave and serious. The original sin, one can use that word, is turning our attention away from Krishna. Desire to enjoy independently from Krishna. So this desire can be in differing degrees. We're going to hear some more about that in part three also. Differing degrees. One may be just a desire for sense enjoyment without necessarily a bad attitude toward Krishna. I mean, like a severely bad attitude. But it can escalate where at the heart level one desires Krishna's position explicitly, or may become an atheist or offend saintly persons that are representing Krishna and not consider them to be saintly. There's degrees. And when offense is there, connected to this is that which is spiritual we don't see as spiritual. The perception becomes distorted. So we showed this image yesterday. Could be either Duryodhan or Shishupal offending Krishna.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
Okay. Both standing before Krishna in his Satchitananda Vigraha and the fullness of his personality, and still they couldn't recognize. Instead, they saw otherwise and began criticizing Krishna. So the understanding here is that an offensive person cannot see. Their perception is distorted by the nature of that offense. They can't see bhakti, bhakta, or Bhagavan properly. So it's powerful, blocking spiritual power. Then concluding, so that what are the offenses, Jiva Goswami in his Bhakti Sandarbha rendering goes through one by one, the 10 offenses, and he indicates two are particularly insidious or damaging. One is sadhu-ninda, because Krishna takes this personally. We discussed the mamata message, we'll see it again. And artha-vada means thinking that the glorification of the holy name is exaggeration. It's hyperbole. It's not, it's, you know, to pump people up to get them to chant because you want to get them to chant, but it's not really true. All the glories of the holy name are exaggerations. And Jiva Goswami concludes this is a particularly non-devotional attitude. So when Durvasa Muni, pictured here, came before the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, pleading with Lord Vishnu to take away his Sudarshan Chakra, Lord Vishnu said, I can't do that independent of Maharaj Ambarish. So this is a statement directly from the Bhagavatam indicating this mamata message or mood. Lord Vishnu says, the pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. Because the devotee thinks that way about Krishna, Krishna thinks that way about the devotee. So when one offends a devotee, Krishna is offended. I mean, it's really easy. If someone says something not nice to you, it's easier to handle that than they say something not nice to another person, about that other person. It's one, commonly at least, becomes more disturbed when someone dear to you is offended than if someone offends you, it rolls off. That tendency is because it's there in Krishna. Then Jiva Goswami indicates this other offense. Atartha Vado Hari Nami from Padma Purana is an offense to think that the glories of the holy name are mere praise. And he quotes the Katyayana Samhita. He who thinks that the glories of the name are mere praise is the most sinful amongst humans and definitely goes to hell. There's another reference which we'll skip. And the example that he gives is King Nriga, who he was a devotee, but he didn't have full faith in devotion or devotional service to Krishna in order to fulfill his aspiration of seeing Krishna. So he did something to supplement, and there was some discrepancy. Bhakti, even if there's some discrepancy in bhakti, Krishna says he corrects it. But if one turns one's attention to something other and there's a mistake, then there's a responsibility for that mistake. So the advocacy of Jiva Goswami is, this is a very important one. One should understand the glory of Krishna, bhakti, and take exclusive shelter of Krishna, bhakti. It may take some time to get there, but cultivate that, aspire for that. And that's the chapter. So when engaging in devotional service, particularly chanting of the holy name, but the service that comes from the chanting of the holy name, in our interactions with sadhus or regard for the process of bhakti and all of the other considerations of the offenses, carefully don't water the weeds, carefully water the creeper of bhakti. So that's a summary of part two. Now, we've discussed what aparad is, and it's one of the categories of anarthas, or the sequence of anarthas from part one that we discussed. So it's gravity. We've heard how it distorts one's perception of things, particularly things that are spiritual. Then Jiva Goswami in his Bhakti Sandarbha, this is again section or texts 153, primarily 153, 154, but it goes way over to 162. I'm following Jiva Goswami's wonderful message on this. So he discusses then there's results. He doesn't exactly use these terms, but there's psychological evidences, you know, how people feel and behave when there's aparad that's been performed. There's results. And they're from beginning or less serious to more serious to most serious. Here's his statement directly from Bhakti Sandarbha. There are faults such as crookedness. That's the first one we're going to go through. There's five. Lack of faith. Failure to remain steady in worshipping the Lord. Becoming absorbed in material objects. Laxity in performing bhakti. And pride in one's performance of bhakti. If these faults are hard to remove, even by bhakti in the form of association with great devotees, this is the result of offenses. There may be traces of offense from previous lives. Elsewhere he says it more strongly, they're definitely residual tendencies, and you'll see as this section goes on. So the first one, the Sanskrit phrase is kautilyam, or a term that Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses, kutilata, which is crookedness. And interestingly, before I show the next slide, who was Radharani so-called married to? What was his name? Abhimanyu. And what was Abhimanyu's mother's name? Jatila. Jatila. And his sister's name? Katila. So, Katila is the daughter of Jatila and the sister of Abhimanyu, and she was also crooked, both by behavior and her posture. And Jatila had matted hair. Very appropriate name for their appearance and their personalities. So this crookedness is deception of others and even deception of oneself. When this behavior is exhibited, we can understand there's something behind that. And that's offense. So the behavior is one presents oneself to others in a deceitful way or a crooked way, and then there's some purpose to gain something, either to protect oneself from being exposed to some impurity or something bad, or to gain something. But it's, you know, self-serving, explicit and deliberate crookedness. And some people do this, they don't even recognize they're doing it. And it's so obvious to everybody except that one person who's doing it. But Jiva Goswami is saying, and we'll see other acharyas similarly speak in this manner, it's a symptom of offense. unfortunately, it's quite common, and even, you know, jokingly common in spiritual matters. There's a Hitopadesh story where there's a lion. And the lion is very old. So old he can't go and capture other animals. So he uses this crooked means of inviting passerbys to receive charity from him. So one traveler is passing through on a path. The lion calls him over and says, "My dear friend, I've taken a vow. The vow that I've taken is that I must give charity every day to someone. So how fortunate you've come by. I have a very valuable jewel, and I'd like to give you this valuable jewel. Please come. Don't worry, I won't eat you. I won't harm you. I just want to give in charity." So the Hitopadesh story says that the innocent and foolish person comes and the lion eats him. In fact, he had no jewel, nor was that his intention. It was just his crookedness to get the person as his meal. So there isn't like a purport in Hitopadesh, but the purport is, in spiritual marketplace, there are people that are crooked. They really don't have something to offer, and the real thing is their intention of exploiting others. And we should be careful, because this is an indication of our own conduct. Straightforwardness in dealings is essential for spiritual life, both self-honesty and honesty with others. Just as one example of this, I'm fond of this particular message of Bhaktisiddhanta. In one, he delivered a paper, rather than the long story, Brahmana and Vaishnava, or Brahmanism and Vaishnavism. There was a big controversy, and he was invited to be a speaker amongst the two groups that were having the controversy to settle the dispute. There were Brahmanas who were caste-conscious Brahmanas, and there were Vaishnavas that were followers of the Panchanatrika system that said it doesn't matter what your birth is, you can become very qualified Vaishnava based upon teachings of the scripture according to Vaishnava principles. So big issue. So the whole day he addressed the audience extolling the virtues of the Brahmana according to scripture. And one of those was this. The crown qualification and quality of a Brahmana is that they're straightforward in their dealings. Saralata is the Sanskrit. And he uses as an example a story from the Shruti portion of the Vedas, where there was a young boy who went to Gautama Rishi, requesting Gautama Rishi he would like to become his disciple. And Gautama Rishi replies, "Very well, I would like to know what is your gotra." And the young boy says, "Well, I don't know what my gotra is." So Gotama says, "Go to your mother and ask your mother, what is your gotra?" So he goes to his mother and asks his mother what his gotra is. Gotama needs to know. And his mother says, "To be honest, I cannot say who your father is. I've been with so many men. So you can tell Gotama, your name is Satyakama, my name is Jabala, so your name is Satyakama Jabala." So the young boy went back and told him the truth. Although it's pretty embarrassing, my mother doesn't even know who my father is. But he told like that to Gotama, and Gotama said, very well, I accept you as a disciple. Because the primary qualification of a brahmana is saralata. They're straightforward and simple in their dealings with others, as opposed to this one, crookedness. So crook behind deception, and including self-deception, is this kotilyam, is offense. Jiva Goswami gives as his example our friend Duryodhana again. He makes reference to the Mahabharata episode where Krishna is coming to Hastinapur as an emissary of peace, and he comes with many ministers and members of the Yadu dynasty. So Duryodhana wants to win over Krishna on his side in this dispute, and so he makes a gorgeous arrangement for reception. And there's elaborate description of banana arches and rose petals and sprinkling rose water and so many, you know, gorgeous festive arrangements to receive Krishna. So when Krishna arrives, he's right in front, as is hospitality, and he receives Krishna and speaks very nice words and says, Krishna, you're our cousin. We wish to receive you warmly here in Hastinapur. Please come to my home or my palace and take a meal with us. And Krishna declines. Krishna says, there's two conditions under which one may eat. One is when you're hungry, and I'm not hungry, and the other is where there's love. But you say, he explicitly said, Krishna, I love you. You're my cousin. He said, I don't see love in you. I see ill feelings, particularly ill feelings toward the Pandavas. So ill feelings towards the Pandavas means ill feelings towards me. Essentially, you're crooked. You're deceiving, and I don't accept your deception. And then he said that there's only one place in the whole of Hastinapur is suitable for me to take my meal, and that's at the home of Vidura. So that's where I'm going. So Krishna went, as we see, to take his meal at the home of Vidura. There's Vidura's wife, so enthusiastic in receiving Krishna that beside herself she gives Krishna the banana peels instead of the bananas. And there also Krishna had some discussion with Kunti Devi, because she was staying at Vidura's home also during this time. So similarly, this crookedness now. People in the present day who hear scriptures and worship the Lord, Guru and devotees, externally, while internally not respecting them because of offense, are crooked. Then there are foolish people that aren't crooked, but they're successful in their worship. They may not be well-educated and sophisticated and polished in their conduct, but when they're simple in heart, they can make advancement in spiritual life. But those that may be sophisticated and talented and skilled in so many ways, but their heart is crooked, they will not be successful. Even they repeat again and again, if you recall this. Repetition of bhakti is necessary because of offense. And it may be very slow if that one holds on to that offense and the mentality of crookedness. So it's a very important message from Jiva Goswami, and in our line of spiritual practice, is cultivate straightforwardness in dealings and avoid crookedness in dealings, being tricky, and including up to the point of self-deception. Because that can also happen. I can think of some people that it's so embarrassing when they conduct themselves or speak. It's so transparently dishonest. and they don't even know it. It's sad, but it happens. And always calculating what's in my interest when it isn't really in one's interest. It's not recognizing the spiritual quality. A nice example of this is, again, Duryodhana. When there was the situation where Duryodhana and Arjuna were given the opportunity to take either Krishna's army or Krishna, Duryodhana was very happy to take Krishna's armies. He didn't really have love for Krishna. He wanted whatever he could get from Krishna. So if he could get Krishna's army, fantastic. And Arjuna wasn't interested in Krishna's army. Arjuna was interested in Krishna. Quite a juxtaposition of character and then speech and behavior. We've been looking at Jiva Goswami's model. Now we're going to look for just a little bit at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's model, where he takes this Kautilyam and breaks it down a little differently. He indicates that there are categories of Namabhas, and his language is Samanya. When there's offenses, there may be slight ones. And even those slight ones are in degree lighter is Chaya Namabhas. And in Chaya Namabhas, there is a sincere effort, knowing that there's a tendency to make offense, and one is sincerely trying to clear that offense. So Chaya means reflection, and Namabhas means dim light of the name. And quickly, that Chaya Namabhas can be mitigated. But the more serious one is Pratibimba Namabhas, where in devotional practice, chanting of the holy name specifically, one may feel something, that this chanting of the holy name is benefiting me. And this way, one, to some degree at least, feels the presence of Krishna. But one isn't feeling the descending mercy coming liberally. So as a result, the consciousness behind the activity of chanting is, one is doing the chanting as a means to get something. It's like, you know, devotional service in the mode of passion. That's more covered than this Chaya Namabhas. Then there's more severe, where there's very big offense, and this is Namaparad. So not one is not even attempting to clear, one just blatantly carrying on offense. And like Shishupal was calling Krishna's name again and again, specifically no feeling toward Krishna at all, other than like disdain. Big offense. Yeah. So it's just like using the same metaphor of clouds in the sky. There's, right now it's, you know, it's very clear sky. But there's some time when there's light clouds, and then thicker clouds, and then really dense clouds. So when there's really dense clouds, you don't feel much heat, and the light is also diminished during the daytime. A rainy day and heavy clouds, temperature goes down, the light becomes less, or clear sky. Like that. This Kautilyam, it's you remember this image, there's severity of offenses in differing degrees. Jiva Goswami uses this language. If one commits, so it's lighter, medium, and very serious. So the first indication of offense is this satyam, or truthfulness, is removed. So in its place comes crookedness. So devotees should be encouraged and trained and practiced at being truthful. Satyam. When that satyam diminishes, one cannot see things properly outside or inside. The root is offense, but we also have to address the behavior that comes from that root. And when more serious, he uses this language, 1,000 offenses, one loses the austerity to perform bhakti properly. And everything becomes troublesome. And then very, this brihat offense, your ability to practice bhakti at all is taken away. Or one may even become angry with Krishna and averse. So scripture is teaching us, Jiva Goswami is indicating, there is degrees of severity of offense. So that's one down and four to go. As far as severity of offenses, so if offenses continue, then faith wanes and diminishes, just as this image shows. Again, the example is Duryodhana, where Duryodhana saw in that assembly, after he said, Krishna, I love you, and Krishna said, I don't want to go to your place, you're a crooked man. There was an attempt to kill Krishna. And Krishna knew it because he's omniscient. But it was without all the detail of how all this played out. Duryodhana left the assembly angry at how Krishna was speaking, and they made a plan to go attack Krishna. When they went to attack Krishna, Krishna showed this universal form, partial universal form. And when he showed that partial universal form, even he saw that, he thought, this is some trick. He didn't have the ability to recognize Krishna's divinity, although Krishna was showing it to him directly. Similarly, Hiranyakashipu, he saw the power of the bhakta, Prahlad, and he saw the power of bhakti to protect Prahlad. In so many ways, he tried his power to kill Prahlad, and he was unsuccessful. He was protected from the snakes, he was protected from the wild elephant, thrown off a cliff, put in burning fire, and Prahlad was protected. And even when Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared, he couldn't recognize, this is the Supreme Lord. He's thinking, this is another person like me that's mystical. Unable to recognize bhakta, bhakti, and Bhagavan. Now, he concludes this little section, this faithlessness, that in these cases, the Bhagavan, Krishna, and Prahlad, and Lord Nrisimhadeva, they exhibited special power. But sometimes a devotee will not exhibit that special power, but they have intense bhakti, the power of being protected. In this case, Parikshit Maharaj did not exhibit the power of repelling the snake bird. He simply accepted it That was his mood. I've offended a brahmana. I'm deserving to receive some reaction. Whatever the Lord wishes, I'm ready for that reaction. He didn't move from that position. But his consciousness was fixed upon the personality of Godhead. He said it in words and he showed it in his behavior. So even if, Jiva Goswami concludes, even if a devotee doesn't exhibit some special power, and therefore we can say, oh, he's a special devotee, they may try to conceal, but it'll be obvious to a transcendentalist that they're fixed in Krishna bhakti, and that will protect them ultimately, and that's their glory. But when there's faithlessness or ashraddha, one can't distinguish who is elevated, who is not elevated, what is that which is fully spiritual. And then, if offense progresses, there's a third category. And it's a long Sanskrit phrase, Bhagavan Nishtha Shavakast Tu Antar Abhinivesha. So, Abhinivesha is absorption. I mean, a devotee is absorbed in the object of Krishna. But antar abhinivesha, one may become absorbed in that which destroys one's regard for Krishna. Bhagavan nishtha. One may become absorbed in things that are averse to shelter in Bhagavan or concentration upon Krishna. It's more severe. And the example that Jiva Goswami gives is interestingly, very interesting, Bharat Maharaj. This question comes up, how is it possible, because it's stated that Bharat Maharaj was on the platform of Bhava Bhakti. We've heard this before. So how can someone who's on Bhava Bhakti fall down? Jiva Goswami explains, so listen carefully. He says that Bharat Maharaj's heart, this is the verse from the Bhagavatam, his heart afflicted by unfulfilled desire, notice that was underlined, Bharat fell from his practice of yoga, from his detachment from material enjoyment achieved by bhakti, and even from his worship of the Lord, by the Lord's special arrangement of prarabdha karma, through the appearance of the young deer. So, prarabdha karma resulted in the deer. Prarabdha karma is karma that's happening now. So, there he is in the forest with the intention of perfecting his life of devotion, very elevated state of consciousness. Here comes a deer into the scene. So the verse is saying prarabdha karma is being manifested in the form of the deer. But the beginning part, there was an unfulfilled desire. And that unfulfilled desire, Jiva Goswami says, is the result of an aparad, an offense from his previous life. It should be understood that it is not possible that prarabdha karma could create obstacles to bhakti, since that karma, prarabdha karma, is weak. Got it? Bhakti can overwhelm and dismiss and remove prarabdha karma. So it's not just that the deer appeared and therefore there was a problem. Rather, the deer appeared, which was the fructification of previous karma, which bhakti had not yet completely eliminated, so here comes the deer. But he consciously chose He knew what he was doing. There was some unfulfilled desire apart from Krishna. And so his detachment from material enjoyment, even his worship of the Lord stopped. We gave this example yesterday. Here it is again. Just like in your computer where you delete a file and it goes into the deleted file space. So bhakti has the power to delete files. But if there's an offense, then, you know, willingly you go and click the deleted file position and put the file back in your computer. You start to act on some old desire. Why? Because of an offense. And if it escalates, you can come into that same position. Bhagavan nishtha chavakas tu antarabhinivesha. What's that? Internal absorption in things which destroy our nishtha. That's what happened with Bharat. So how did he fall? Because there was a residual tendency due to some past offense, and he said yes to it consciously. The prompt was there and he went for it. Internal absorption becomes obsessive. Even if one is completely aware that a specific thing or sense gratification activity is totally unfavorable for one's devotional service, one still cannot stop one's absorption in it. Why? Past life offense. Just to show this madness position, there's a verse in this section. Bharat Maharaj, he became delirious. When the deer disappeared one evening, he looks at the moon and says, "Can it be that the moon, who is so kind to an unhappy man, might also be kind upon my deer, knowing that it has strayed from home and has become motherless? This moon has given the deer shelter near itself just to protect it from the fearful attacks of a lion." He sees the moon and sees what looks like a deer and the marks on the moon, and thinks the moon has given shelter to the deer. He's become delirious. It's not just poetic, he's delirious. One other little example he gives is King Indradumna. Similarly, why is it that King Indradumna offended Agastya? It was behavior, that neglect of Agastya was due to some prior offense. And that was the cause of his behavior towards Agastya, which in turn created a problem for him. Interesting. Jiva Goswami's examination of the anartha, the anatomy of anarthas with different great, great Vaishnavas. Again, bhakti wasn't destroyed, but the offenses may manifest and cause us lots of turmoil. Imagine becoming an elephant or something. Two more. And if offenses continue and escalate, he indicates that there is bhakti saityam, or laziness, lack of endeavor in sadhana bhakti. Because if you endeavor in sadhana bhakti, you can gradually overcome, just like the discussion yesterday evening. Even there may be weakness, if there is this core faith, then you can continue. Even with a little flame, a little light, a little flickering faith, fan the spark. of that little faith by continuing. But in, endeavors in bhakti become slackened when it progresses. So here's a little cartoon. You know, this Prabhupada, during his time, it was a cartoon that showed in the newspaper. The wife is saying, chant, chant, chant. And the husband is saying, can't, can't, can't. So Prabhupada's comment was, he could easily, instead of saying can't, 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 say Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. If there is laxity in bhakti, the kind that's antithetical to bhakti and does not disappear even by practice of bhakti, full of taste in a devotee able to make distinctions, the cause is offense. So incapable of recognizing offense, or an ignorant person is capable of attaining perfection by little bhakti. You know, mercy can come even we're in that condition. Just have to accept mercy. Being eager to accept mercy is ideal. In this stage, we become more self-centered. You know, our value system shifts from what's beneficial for Krishna and the cause of Krishna and the mission of Krishna. We become far more absorbed in our own petty considerations. And the final one, sva bhakti adikrita manitvam. One becomes proud of one's achievements in bhakti. And the example is Daksha. Daksha, when he was speaking before Lord Shiva, he was praising his achievements as he was offending Lord Shiva. So, and he did the same thing with Narada. When he was criticizing Narada, he was exhibiting this awful pride about, I am this, and I've done all these sacrifices, and I understand how to reach the goal, and you're an offender. You've cheated my sons. I curse you. Pride. The extreme degree of pride. So when pride comes, it can be understood we're already fallen. And then other things happen afterwards. And further offenses are committed. So pride is a big problem. It weights one down further and further. And extreme stages. So we're almost done. Here's now just some comparison. In Harinam Chintamani chapter 3, we've been following this model, analysis model of Jiva Goswami. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's model, the language is different, but the principles are the same. Thirst for the impermanent, making offenses, miserly weakness of heart. These clouds of anarthas block the rays of the sun. In terms of the development of anarthas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that clouds of anarthas cover the sun of the holy name. After committing offenses, the resultant effect is the offender is Hridaya Dorbalyam. So this Hridaya Dorbalyam is broken down in this way, which are very similar. This weakness of heart are in four categories that's very similar to the five mentioned. We just heard more detail on from Jiva Goswami. Tucha Sakti, attachment to objects not related to Krishna, manifesting even as attachment to the pain that we have experienced, or cherish the pain that we have been inflicted by others. Weakness. Kutinati, deceitfulness, recognize the kotilyam. Matsarya, enviousness, not being able to see another person in a proper way, but being envious of them instead. And then svapratishtha, pride. These four are categories of types of hridaya dorbalyam. So his, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's model, it's similar to the five psychological symptoms that result from offenses. If you remember from the first day, there was that sequence from ignorance of truth, tattva vibhrama, that results in desires, then results in offenses, then results in hridaya dorbalyam. So this hridaya dorbalyam in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's model, it's similar to the psychological symptoms of aparad. Is anybody lost? Should I say it again, or it's clear? Should I say it again? No, it's clear. Okay. Remedy. So that's all the bad news. Here's the good news. There's a remedy. If you remember from the very first day, the first class, we read that verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila. There was a section from Bhakti Sandarbha, text 270, right from that purport. And the emphasis that Jiva Goswami gives is the importance of humility. So there's the beginning entry into the remedy realm. We must initially become humble, recognize our plight. And he uses this word dinatva, dina, humble mood, considering oneself dina or fallen. That in that humble mood, it allows one to look within, especially when we hear messages of scripture, look within and see where there's weakness, where there's strength, exercise the strength, take that strength and work on the weakness, and specifically, consciously, in this way, consciously, not mechanically, but with feeling, with respect, with faith, consciously take up the process of bhakti, not in a mechanical way, but in a devotional mood of humility, to free ourselves from the material circumstance, the being bound to our material circumstance. From Padma Purana, there's a very nice definition of namaha, and this is, we're done. Here's the translation. Ma represents ahankara, and na represents negation of ahankara. Thus, by uttering namaha, one negates one's independent attitude. The jiva is dependent on the Lord. He lives with dependence. Therefore, one should completely reject the idea of accomplishing by one's own capacity. Nothing is left to be accomplished by the ability of the Lord. Consigning one's body to the Lord, one should serve Him. Namaha. So many of our Nama, Om Vishnu Padaya, it's there over and over and over and over. Those that chant Gayatri Mantra, it's Namaha. It's negation of false ego. Ahankar. Starts there. Now, so we can mechanically say it, or we can feelingly say it. we can submit ourselves at the lotus feet of the Lord. So here's the final slide. Here's the four Kumaras. They're very eager to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Like examining, scrutinizingly his lotus feet. They're intelligent. And we should become like that. The lotus feet of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. That's the remedy message. And we'll continue more on the remedy message in part four. Any discussion? Premananda?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj, thank you so very much. I have to really, I think it will take some time to really deeply understand this, but I'm just trying to superficially express something which I got from this last section. So prarabdha karma, which normally we, you know, feel so much about prarabdha karma, it seems to be almost nothing compared to past offenses. And so in counteracting this effect of this past offense, I mean, I'm seeing like the last section what you said, there is an effort needed from our side, but also my question is like in the case of Bharat Maharaj and as well as King Indradyumna, the Lords appears to have definitely played a specific role in protecting them, in the sense that somehow or other they were fully aware of their situation, and they were eventually completely protected by the Lord. So in our case, we are just ordinary people, and so in our case, I mean, my understanding now is that we have to make an effort from our side, a sincere effort. And even though we are, I mean, my question is, even though we are just ordinary people, the Lord's protection is assured with regard to this dealing with this past offenses or prior offenses.
He reciprocates with our willingness to be in our relationship with Him. And that's variable. Our willingness to be in relationship with Him from person to person is different. And even in our own lives, you know, one part of the day to the next part of the day to another day, our willingness to be in our relationship with the Lord is variable. And He reciprocates. Now how, from His side, He does what He does? And it's inexplicable. But it's very clearly a loving relationship. It's His kindness comes. So effort is needed on our side, for sure. And how He does what He does is inexplicable. But He's there, reciprocating with each one of us, specifically, appropriately for our need and our circumstance, and for our willingness to be in our relationship with Him. So that's what we do from our side. It's not just, you know, activity. It's the desire to be in a relationship with Him. Most critical. Most critical. And then He reciprocates however He likes. Does that address your question?
Yes, because this past prior offenses is something nobody can have any kind of a idea, you know, what is there.
Correct. But He does. Anything else? Yes. Sachi Kumar? Microphone up front. Okay.
Similar to her question, How do you take responsibility for our past sins that we do not
know? We don't even know what they are.
Yeah, yeah.
You accept them. That's how you take responsibility for them. You may not know what they are. Likely we don't know what they are. We know there's something. I take responsibility. I don't blame somebody else. It's easy to blame somebody else. I don't blame Krishna. I don't know exactly what it is, but I don't really need to know exactly what it is. I need to take responsibility. Here comes something, and it's due to my past. You know, good fortune, ill fortune, it's coming my way because of the past. And what I don't need to do is just get absorbed in counteracting the ill fortune and exploiting the good fortune. I need to, in both cases, and the mix, is stay fixed in my mood of an intention of serving and pleasing Krishna. Whatever the past thing may be, good fortune, ill fortune, pious activity, sinful activity, stay fixed in my position of devotion. I take responsibility for it. That's the Tatte Nukampam verse is saying exactly that. The circumstance, Brahma's made an offense, I take responsibility for it. I'm not going to get absorbed in counteracting the reaction. He could have. And tendency is, here comes some reaction, we counteract the reaction. Something comes flying at you, you put your arms up. One may put one's arms up, but you know, one should not deviate from the position of taking shelter of Krishna, because your arms aren't going to protect you. It's not meant. So it's the consciousness of being in Krishna's shelter while we do what we do, whether we know what's the past offense or sin or not. Yes, in the front.
Guru Maharaj, when I was listening to the whole results of aparad, it feels like everything is there inside when I introspect.
Everything is there
within me, for me. Like all
everything
these results.
Everything is there. What?
All these results, I feel like I'm having.
Which you're having?
All the results of...
Results, aparad. Okay, okay.
When that kind of like an awareness comes that these results are there because of offenses that I'm committing or committed.
Yes.
Sometimes it is like, okay, let me just somehow stick to the process, just keep going forward. But there are other times where this overwhelm and to counteract the overwhelm, I just defend. Okay, all right, that's fine. Like, it's like, so I don't know what to,
well,
how to respond.
You may do something to address the circumstances. It's not that you have to keep your arms to your side and your mind blank. You may have feelings and you may do something. The message is whether you do or whether you don't. Just like this example of Parikshit Maharaj didn't do anything to protect himself from the snake bird. He didn't do anything. He could have. He didn't. But one thing he did was his consciousness was fixed upon the personality of Godhead. Then you take other examples. Arjuna fought. And, you know, different when the sons of Draupadi were killed or when Abhimanyu was killed mercilessly, he did something. You know, so one may do something, not do something. Both are kings. Do something, not do something. It's okay, do something. Don't let your mind budge an inch. That's this Tatte Nukampam verse. Don't let your mind budge an inch from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. That's so become attached to his shelter. And different experiences in life one can take, they're just opportunities to do that. Here's a new circumstance, here's another circumstance. Oh, I've never seen this one before. Here comes the same one over and over again. Now it's an opportunity to stay fixed at the lotus feet of the Lord. And I may do something or not do something. I may simply tolerate it, or I may say something, do something. One thing, it's not going to budge an inch from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in this mood of wishing to serve and please Him. Does that address your question? You know, you go away from that position and you've just become weakened and vulnerable and feeling vulnerable, and then we have to defend ourselves and, you know, forget Krishna further. So you may do something or say something, but don't leave that position. You have something?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was not able to understand how could Daksha curse Narada Muni.
How did Daksha offend him?
Yeah, like he cursed Narada Muni.
Yeah, he cursed him.
Narada Muni.
Before he cursed him, he said some bad things. Like you're this and you're that, and I'm really the good one. I'm the sadhu, and you are a sadhu.
But he's a pure devotee, Narada Muni, and yeah. How could he curse him?
No, Narada didn't curse Daksha.
No, Daksha cursed Narada.
Yeah.
How could he do it to a pure devotee? How did he get that power?
Narada accepted. The curse was, you can't stay any place more than 3 days. And Narada went, yay, perfect. He didn't have to go, yay. He could have said, you know, your curse means nothing. You're an impotent, you know, something or other.
So they have power to curse pure devotees?
Well, he only because Narada accepted. Narada doesn't have to accept. It's like this discussion about Chitraketu. He accepted. He said it. I accept your curse. He could have done something. He could have counteracted the curse or pleaded with her, please take it back. Or he didn't. He just accepted it.
Thank you, Maharaj. And one more is, Parikshit Maharaj, also that I did not understand how he offended by putting the snake. And also,
You didn't understand how he offended?
Yeah, like how could he offend by putting the snake?
You don't understand how that's an offense?
No.
It's a dead snake. He puts a dead snake around his, instead of a garland, it's a garland of a dead snake. You're such a person, the kind of garland you should have is a dead snake. Here.
So for me, initially I understood that to make Parikshit Maharaj hear Bhagavatam, so that is what has happened.
That was why the Lord... Krishna is in the heart of Maharaj Parikshit. Why Krishna induced Maharaj Parikshit to do such a thing? So that he could be cursed, so that Shukadeva Goswami could come, so that Maharaj Parikshit could be absorbed in Srimad Bhagavatam and go back to Godhead.
So that is the arrangement of Krishna?
Yeah. Pretty, you know, unusual, but that was his arrangement. He wanted Bhagavatam to be heard by a qualified person. He chose Maharaj Parikshit and chose to have him receive it in that way.
Thank you. And last one is, I could not understand this. Prarabdha karma could not create obstacle to bhakti because karma is weak. Weak.
Weak.
Yeah. I thought karma is...
So bhakti is stronger. Karma is weaker. Bhakti can overcome the weaker karma. Karma can be obliterated by bhakti. Both, you know, good and bad. That's not, you know, something to worry about. That is, you know, the tendency to be the enjoyer of the fruits of our past good karma is one of, according to the model of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it's one of the sources of offense, or excuse me, of impurities of heart. I do piety because I know I'll get some pious credits, and from those pious credits I'll get some prosperity, and I'll enjoy the prosperity. It's an impurity of heart. It doesn't take away, let's say, the capacity to be a learned person. That's a fruit of piety, and this opposite is impiety. That doesn't mean now I become a devotee and my capacity to understand things is gone. It's the material aspect of that is gone, and then that same dimension or power becomes utilizing that in Krishna's service only, not misusing it in dilly-dallying with curiosity items and trivia. The bhakti has that power. In karma, prarabdha karma is weak compared to bhakti, which is strong. Does that clarify?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just one more quick thing, Maharaj. Just like the case of Maharaja Parikshit's story, that of Gajendra, the story of Gajendra is also a lot of lessons in that for us. I always thought that was also an arrangement of the Lord. So here it was said that he had neglected Agastya due to prior offense, but Indradyumna becoming Gajendra, and that whole pastime is such a important pastime for us to learn so much out of that. So I always thought that that was a special arrangement meant for King Indradyumna to go back to Godhead. Is that?
Yeah, that doesn't. What you just said doesn't negate what Jiva Goswami said. There's many lessons, and there's two out of so many more lessons. To make this one point doesn't, you know, eclipse everything else or negate everything else. There's many lessons. So let's go back and put the two together. Indradyumna, great devotee. Krishna wants to show Indradyumna special favor. And he does. And Indradyumna has this lingering past offense. The Supreme Lord wants to remove that tendency due to that lingering past offense. So he does.
So that means we can all be assured that
Krishna is
Lord
kind.
Will take care of that.
Yeah, Krishna is kind. That we can be assured of. We may not understand it. It may look like, oh no. And then get lost in, you know, like Shatrupa's question. Oh.
The mere fact that we are all in, I mean, at least my feeling is that the Chaya Abhas, which is considered to be better than the Pratibimba.
Yeah.
As long as we perform devotional activities with strong faith, then it's an indication that we are in a better position than.
Yes. The strong faith is exhibited by the conscious and internal and conscious. We're going to hear about this in part 4. You know, be conscious when you perform your sadhana. Be conscious of what the sadhana is. And then if you're not, then it's darker. It's going to have less effect, even you're doing sadhana. So the clearing, using that language that Prabhupada used, is where there's not only faith, but faith exhibited by I'm striving, consciously striving to perfect, you know, to be absorbed in remembrance of Krishna, in thought of Krishna, in hearing the sound of Krishna's name while I'm calling Krishna's name. And we're striving like that, at least attempting. That's this chaya. We're not there. There's still some clouds, but not heavy. Then there's the heavier ones.
So this Pradibimba Abhas and Chaya Abhas terminologies are Bhaktivinoda Thakur's?
Yes, they're his terms.
And in the case of Pradibimba Abhas, there is still material attachment. There's a goal, some other
sure.
agenda is there,
sure.
basically.
That's sure. it. And again, these aren't buckets. Just like looking in the sky. Sometimes there's light, you know, clouds in the sky. Nimbus clouds. And then there's cumulus clouds. And there's really heavy cumulus clouds. And then there's rain clouds. And then the whole sky is filled. You just watch the clouds move around in the sky. It's just changing all the time. As the clouds in the sky are changing all the time. Just like, you know, from when I was speaking before, it was a blue sky and now there's all kinds of clouds in the sky. So similarly, the condition of heart is changing. And the barometer is our regard for Krishna. It gets more covered, less covered. And even if it's in this covered, let it stay striving for being in our relationship with Krishna as we're chanting and as we're doing our devotional service. Even we're more covered, less covered, whatever the condition, one thing. That's bhakti. Striving. Unalloyed, unmixed bhakti. And that has the power to dismiss all this other stuff. That means Krishna can remove it. And like the example of King Indradumna, Krishna removed it. Very interesting way to remove it. But he removed it.
It's really so interesting to see Bhaktivinoda Thakur has analyzed it so thoroughly too. I mean, good, interesting to understand the psychological effects anyway, because I feel like it just gives you more clarity.
Well, that psychological, two things. That psychological effect was Jiva Goswami's five. And then second point is, it's very clear to me that our great acharyas are following in the footsteps of Jiva Goswami. They modify, they have their realization, they express in slightly different language, in a slightly different way, but they're following Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami is a fastidious follower of Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami is a fastidious follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we follow our acharyas and we're in good hands. We're in Lord Chaitanya's hands. And the gift that Lord Chaitanya wanted to give, we can receive. So yes, it'll help us, you know, be really clear. A classic expression used in the Vedas is when, they use really simple terms, seeing pots and plates. When there's darkness, you cannot distinguish the pots and plates. When there's light, then you can distinguish the pots and plates. So like you just said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, there's the pots and there's the plates. There's this kind of pot and there's that kind of plate. And there's varieties of pots and plates. That's the anatomy of an artist's theme. So he's laying it out for us. So when we are, if we're, you know, sufficiently spiritually, scripturally based, we can see all kinds of circumstances, not bewildered by the circumstances, because it's stated by our acharyas, this is this and that's that. And then what do you do about this and that? You know what to do. That's like, you know, being spiritually educated. And then having bhakti, so you do, and the other ones you don't do. And when you see the manifestations of the other ones where someone didn't do, or our own selves, when we didn't do, there's consequences. And it's not mythology, and it's not scare tactics, it's not speculation. It's seeing pots and plates. Seeing the structure of bhakti, and when bhakti becomes weakened by mist of ignorance and the clouds of anarthas, you know your way around. Just because I travel a lot, different persons who I travel with, they have GPS systems where it can tell you all kinds of things. Like, you know, we were going from New Jersey to Manhattan, and on my own little device, it said, well, we don't go across the Staten Island Expressway because there's 4 accidents on Staten Island Expressway. We should go Holland Tunnel. And, you know, the delay is, you know, just a few minutes. Saved us a lot of trouble. This can save us a lot of trouble and our path back to Godhead. And so it's not just academic. It's intended, you'll see in part 4, it's intended for us to hear these things with introspection and see what's going on in there. Where's the position of strength? Let me exercise that. Where's the position that needs attention, that's weakness? Let me give some attention to that. And I know what it is and why it's there. It's like going to a finding, if you have a medical problem, one of the greatest difficulties is finding a qualified doctor. And there's another difficulty of following the recommendation of the qualified doctor, but finding the qualified doctor who can diagnose and tell you exactly what's going on, and then you know what to do. Most doctors really don't know. That's just guesswork. Or cheating. It's a profession. Profession of cheating. Well, their intention may be good, but they really don't know. They're just doing the best they can. And they really don't know. Let's try this. That didn't work. Let's try that. Oh, that had a bad result.
So how many more parts to this?
One more.
Only one.
Okay, we're going to end Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.